So that is
well,
the
but we do a casual on,
yes,
as opposed
but,
to a formal on. I'd like you to go to my hallway outside my room, get one of the fans, bring it over here, plug it in, have it blowing on me.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to welcome everybody to the Saturday night special of The World According to Ben Stein. This is going to be a very, very, very short episode. We just wanted to stay in touch, say hello to everybody, tell you how much we love you.
We love you.
And we will be back to our regular schedule, but also we are now on Truth Social Media. So come join us on Truth Social Media. And here's the thing, I want to follow you back and we want to follow you back. So if you join Truth Social and want to follow us and we'll follow you, just email us at worldaccordingtobenstein@gmail.com. That's worldaccordingtobenstein@gmail.com. And also don't forget to subscribe to our email, benstein.substack.com.
Good. That's good.
Okay, Ben, you wanted to do something, and I think it's very important that we discuss. Both of us were blessed.
I know, but we have to do something. But you just told me you can't breathe.
It's hard, but I just wanted to get to something that you wanted to. I wanted you to get to something very quickly,
okay.
And that is gratitude for our fathers.
Excellent. This is what you and I have been talking about. Gratitude for America and gratitude for our fathers. I had the best father in the world. I know you. You're blessed. Your father is still among the land of the living. You are blessed. You're a wonderfully, wonderfully fortunate young man. But of course, you're very young, so naturally you would have a living father. Our fathers did so much for us. It's incredible. I mean, I don't know what your father's background was, but my father's father's father came over from, I don't know, some place in Europe, and then my grandfather was in the U.S. Army Cavalry and fought in the Philippines, and then he worked as a skilled tool and die maker for Ford Motor. It was unusual for a Jew to be at Ford Motor, and then he left there, and he had various very small and very unsuccessful businesses, and then was unemployed during almost all of the Great Depression, really heart-rending, as my wife would say. And then he during World War II, he worked at an armory making weapons for the U.S. to fight the Nazis and the Japanese, and he was a great, great man. And we really, really are grateful for him. My wife's ancestors, for God's sake, my wife's father was awarded the Silver Star for combat gallantry when he was 22 years old, right out of West Point. This was an incredible man, an incredible, unbelievable man, a really, really great man, a great, great Superman. And we have to be grateful for these people. Now, I there's nothing that I will ever be able to do that even remotely compares with what these wonderful people did for me and my family and my wife and everybody. You can see me in my study in my house down in the desert. You can see medal after medal after medal that my wonderful, wonderful father-in-law, Colonel Dale Denman Jr., was awarded. Wow.
No, it's absolutely amazing, and so is the story of your father, and so is the story of my father, as I've shared.
Yes,
with my,
I want to hear. The,
I mean,
I
my
don't
father
think
was the.
To hear enough about your father, Judah.
No, I mean, my father was one of the first people, if not the first person in his family, to go to college.
Mine was too, I think.
Very blue collar. He worked for my grandfather worked for Eagle Nuts. Remember they had the nut and bolt company called Eagle.
Oh, yeah. That's a big company.
Very big company. And then he started a candy store called Butterfly, which was on, which was very successful before they got out leased and they had to move to South Street Seaport. But my father, was the first, like I've shared, was the first, person to ever wear a yarmulke at Time Life magazine. But most importantly, to the people out there that are going to be listening to this, a lot of people go through struggles in life. My father always believed that as long as his son was alive, there was a chance.
God bless him.
And I can't think of, when people always ask me what the greatest 12-step message has been, I always say that what my father said, because you believe the same thing.
Yes.
And you believe, I've seen the way you help people. And you're always, if your person's above ground, they could be helped and saved.
Well, you're very kind to say so. And I'm so grateful for my father, for all the fathers in America who fought the Nazis, fought the Japanese, fought against any kind of tyranny, and who went through this horrible, horrible World War II, came out, found themselves being led by a government that was loaded with communists, and had to fight to try to keep the government of the United States from being totally bored out, hollowed out from within by communist infiltrators from the Soviet Union. And those people were treated as heroes, whereas the people who discovered the communists in the government, like Richard Nixon, he was the great detective of communists in the government, they were treated like criminals because the media machine in Hollywood and in New York and Washington is all about heaping blame and scorn on anyone who stands up for America and mocking and humiliating anybody who stands up for the Constitution.
And it's not been, the amazing thing is how it's still occurring, that the hero hero fathers are the ones that, and the mothers that go to the school boards and are screaming about what their kids are being taught and have been mocked, have been treated like garbage. And people wonder, you know, and we've often said this, why it's so important for the president of the country to often be like a father figure type person, Ben.
This president that we have now is not at all a father figure. Right. I'm much older than you, Judah, as I've said many times. I was blessed beyond words to have as president when I was a child, Dwight David Eisenhower, who had been head of the Allied armies fighting against the Germans in Europe, in Western Europe. And we had this great, great, great father figure. And what do we have now? Who do we have now as a father figure to defend us against the communists inside the government and outside the government and all around the government and in the media? Who do we have now who's defending us against criminals and violent people trying to harm us in every kind of different way? Nobody.
Absolutely nobody. And people wonder why Trump's popularity is still so high in the conservative movement. For whatever you want to say about him, he was a father-like character.
You're exactly right. And he basically said, okay, if you want to, you want to hurt the American people, you got to come to me. Come on, let me have it. And I can't see Mr. Biden doing that. Mr. Biden has many good qualities. I don't know if you've ever told this before, but he comes from a state that has the best fried chicken in the eastern U.S., maybe in all the U.S. But he is not a leader of
America. Ben, you said to me today, you don't even know if as you've constantly said, you don't even know if he's there.
Tucker Carlson used a wonderful phrase about him. He's like a hologram of a president. He's like a hollow figure hollowed out by the communists and other people who are secretly controlling the White House and controlling the government. He's not there. I mean, there's a song. What is the song from the 60s? He's not there, or she's not there, or something like that. He's not there. I mean, where is he? Where the hell is Mr. Biden?
It's a great question.
What's he doing?
And listen, to the people out there listening, we decided we're going to do the Saturday night special, even though it's 110 degrees, the air conditioner's broken. We are two Jews in the desert without air conditioning. And Ben, we always say to ourselves, it's like, God, how blessed are we? And you're the one that really brought this into my vernacular, because it's like, we don't have air conditioning. We're not in the fields. We're not in combat. We're not jumping off ships into fire. We're minus air conditioning for a few minutes.
I know. It's a joke. It's a bad joke that we should consider ourselves seriously deprived because our air conditioning isn't working And we've got a lot of problems getting the air conditioning to work. Of course, that's a trivial, trivial thing. Can you imagine what it was like being a soldier in Guadalcanal or in Iwo Jima, fighting against the Japanese? No, were very, very, very skilled at jungle combat and fighting against them in horrible, horrible, horrible climatic conditions and winning, beating them back. So they eventually had to go back and fell back upon themselves in their home islands. And we consider ourselves, and it was so hard, people, American soldiers, British soldiers, South Korean, South African soldiers were being fought tooth and nail by the Japanese and by the Japanese. And they were complaining. The American soldiers just fought and fought and fought until they won. And this is what America used to be like. And this is what America can be like and will be like again if we can get Mr. Trump to be in office again and let him lead America back to greatness. And greatness does not mean that you have to go to war. I don't want to see my son, whom I love beyond words, going back to war. I don't want to see him. I don't want to see any of the people I love like mad going back to war. I want to see an America at peace. I want to see a world at peace. Let's not throw ourselves into the volcano of war. Let's stay strong, stay resolute, build the best armory of weapons in the world. And let's say to the Chinese or to the North Koreans, if you want to fight us, go ahead, but bear in mind we have the best airplanes, best ships, best every kind of ground equipment there is in the world. And if it costs expensive, it costs a lot, forget it. We've got plenty of money. We have plenty of money in this country. We can afford to arm ourselves enough to protect the last great bastion of human dignity on the face of the earth. We can't afford it.
Brilliantly said, and as we're running out of time, I just want to say two things.
Well, wait, I don't see why we have to quickly.
Because it's a little warm in here.
Well, we can delay. You can last. And now, if you mentioned just talking about the fact that we don't want to wimp out.
That's true. No wimping out, but I love it, Ben. But I think it's also important to note that our fathers are our biggest fans.
Absolutely. My father, God rest his soul, got an antenna to put out on the balcony of his unit at the Watergate Apartments, so he could watch Win Ben Stein's Money and many other shows that I was on then before I was largely canceled for being a pro-America and loving America. They were our greatest fans, and they stood up for us, and we stand up for them. I never, ever, 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 ever would back down from arguing, defending my father. I still wouldn't do it ever under any circumstances.
And the reason,
similarly with my wife's father. My wife's father was such a mensch. The guys had balls on him like billiard balls. And he never, ever, ever backed down from defending America.
Well, I also think it's amazing, before I forget, my father does the same thing. Every time we do a show, he wakes up the next morning, sits in his office, and you know he's not the healthiest man. He watches us, he emails me. My parents have scrapped put in a scrapbook every single thing I've ever written. And a lot of that I owe to you, of course. But I think it's so important. You just, this father thing, as you talk about, Colonel Dale Dunman, and he encouraged you. I want people to realize this is a guy that served in how many different wars, Ben? Three or four?
In extremely intense combat. In the Vietnam War and in World War II. But at 22, out of West Point, he was fighting against the SS, the toughest of the tough German soldiers.
But I think the biggest point is that when you were fighting against the war in Vietnam back here, he celebrated it. He wanted you as a US civilian to say that Vietnam was unjust.
It was more than that. He didn't say it was unjust. He said it was unwinnable. It was a slaughterhouse. We should never have been in it. And the best thing we could possibly do was to get out of it as soon as we could. And he was very, very strong on that point. And so were most of the men he worked with some years ago. Sad to say, now it's been quite a few years ago. He married his third wife, a wonderful Sue Denman. And they had a wedding reception at their home in, somewhere in Arkansas. I forgot what's the name of the town. Anyway, it'll come to me. And many, many, many of the people at that reception were war veterans, graduates of West Point. And they all said, we are glad, Colonel Denham told us how you fought against the war in Vietnam. And you were absolutely right to do it. I wish I had done it. I wish I had encouraged my sons and daughters to do it. We want to fight the wars that we want that we can win, and that are the wars that we should be winning. No other wars that we shouldn't be in.
And I want to thank Profa in the rants. If you have someone support you, Ben says this to me all the time. If you have someone support you, what you're doing, you have the potential to accomplish anything. And Ben says this about his father all the time. I say this about Ben and my father and my family. And Ben, this is something very important about Trump. Trump supported the people. The people felt like they had it. When you feel like people above you support you, there isn't much you can do.
That is absolutely true. And I think it's important that we realize that, yes, on one side, there's a major mass media, the powerful mass media juggernaut, and the legal structure of the country, the fake, I don't know if I should call it fake, but let's say the Department of Justice, so-called.
Well, it is right now,
the various other parts of government. And I'm sure that most of the people working there are trying to do their best, but it's just not getting done. And I would encourage anyone who possibly has a chance of getting himself or herself out there to demonstrate in favor of keeping America warm, but not too hot. Do it. This country has got to be run by the people who live here. This country's got to be run by the American people, not run by the New York Times. I have nothing against the New York Times. They were kind enough to have me write a column for them for a number of years. They fired me because I explicitly said I believe in God. And then they fired me. And then when they said they would reconsider, they fired me. This is a really good one. Because they said I had taken a bribe from a company, namely that was a big investment banking company called Goldman Sachs. And the bribe was a toy football, which had been requested by my editor at the New York Times. And I actually had it this email down saying, the football you sent me for my son isn't big enough, and you have to get Shaquille O'Neal to sign it. So that's the kind of people I was working with.
And I could honestly say, I hate the New York Times. When you look at them through history and why reporting the news so accurately, Ben, is because during the World War II and before pre-World War II, they weren't reporting the news always accurately, obviously. And that caused a horrific amount of damage. Imagine if the New York Times was reporting what was actually going on.
Well, it was a very scary time for the United States. At the beginning of the Hitler regime and Hitler's buildup to World War II, the New York Times really did not have a clue as to how grim the situation was and how the Führer was setting up a gigantic mechanism to wage an enormous world war. Had we any idea, had we been being informed properly by the media about how sinister and scary World War II was going to be, I don't think we would have gotten into that war. Maybe it was good that we didn't get into that war. But I do not think we should get into war. That we're not prepared.
Different time.
The New York Times had the biggest news gathering staff of any newspaper in America at that time. They could have reported about how the Germans were working flat out 24-hour-a-day shifts, building the Messerschmitt 109. They didn't do that. They did not do that. And so we got way, way, way far behind in terms of our coverage of aviation, combat aviation aircraft. And We did not follow that up anywhere near as well as we should have. The New York Times could have done it. They didn't do it.
And, it, you know, it's, it, and when you, as closing up shop, I just want to remind you, it's such a great point that you're saying, because even though Walter Cronkite did admit later in life he was to the left, he was instrumental in us sort of realizing what was going on in Vietnam. If I could stand corrected, but didn't he? That was his famous thing, basically saying we're losing.
I think he did say that, and he was certainly right to say it. It was a terrible thing. The U.S. would report night after night that they were sending out patrols in the night into the jungle to attack and harass the Viet Cong, which was the combat arm of the Vietnamese communist guerrillas. And it wasn't happening at all. They weren't sending out any patrols at night. And so I do give credit to Mr. Cronkite for reporting the truth about that, but it would have been much better if they could have done it a little tiny bit earlier.
No, 100, but you got to sometimes give credit. Like, we've been giving credit to the New York Times when they do report stories accurately. We wish they would have taken back a lot of stories. But as I just want to get back to it, it's all about gratitude and God.
But can we just get a couple of more minutes?
Yeah.
We have very few people in the world are getting across our message. Here we are, the greatest country in the world. Prosperity, freedom, a big, wonderful kiss from everyone in the armed forces who is being so good to us and protecting us, the police who are constantly being spit on and shit on by the poor, so-called poor people, but really the political activists of the left, and they are still out there protecting us and with their bodies. And we are not grateful enough to them. I have it, make it a point, and I hope and pray that to anyone listening to this who hears it and pays attention will do the same thing. If when you see a policeman on the street or in a car or at a restaurant, go up to him or her and say, "Sir, madam, I cannot describe to you how grateful I am to you for defending the United States of America. We would be nothing without you, nothing, absolutely nothing." And let's make that gratitude known. The police don't know that. They don't know it. They don't have ESP. They can't tell what's going on in our brains. Let's get right up in their face and say, "We love you. We are grateful for you. We couldn't live without you. We are never going to forget that whatever good times we have are very, very largely due to your greatness and your heroism."
That's an exceptional point and brilliantly said. I'm going to tell you why that's such an exceptional point that you raised, sometimes without even realizing it, because they're being inundated with the same mass media as everybody else. So for all intents and purposes, they think what they're seeing on the screen is such hatred for them and animus towards them that they believe that to be the message, not realizing that most people on the streets are forever grateful for the service that they're doing, that they've done in the past.
Yeah, I think to myself, I live in Beverly Hills, California most of the time, not all the time, most of the time. And I live very near the police station. There are homeless people on the street in Beverly Hills. And policemen go out there and they talk to them. Now, the homeless people are not sweet little angels. They are carrying big, huge, super sharp knives. They could take them out and stab the policeman anytime. What is standing between them and us? The law. And the law is pretty damn weak these days, unless the law will say to the world.
Not because of them, by the way. Well, not because of the police. It's not. It's because of the prosecutors and the media that's making it weak for them. Police want to protect and serve.
Yes. The police are absolutely fine. I have no problem whatsoever with the police. I don't think any sane person in America does have any problem with the police. But some people out there are saying to the police, "You guys are thugs.
Yep,
you're
fascists. A lot of people.
You're bullies." And what a lie that is, a vicious, sick lie that is. The police are the guardians of everything you do. Wifey and I go to sleep at night, and wifey and I are in a house, and we have a fair number of people work for us. But these people would not be able to stand up to an armed mob coming to kill us if they came to us and were storming the doors. Who stands between us? A phone call to the LAPD.
And hopefully.
What's that call say? Somebody, we're in trouble. We're 2.5 blocks away from you. Police get over here right away. And I've had to make that call, and the police are there so fast it would make your head spin.
That definitely, though, that is definitely a zip code thing, because not a lot of people get that response time. But again, we're so understaffed in this city.
Insanely understaffed.
People don't realize how understaffed.
What is more expensive, peace or war?
Yeah.
What is cheaper, human life or political correctness? Look,
we know what the left thinks.
We want to defund the police. Why don't you take a red hot poker and stick it up your ass? This is not a joke. We have to protect ourselves and our country, and defunding the police is not the way to do it. The police are trying very hard to protect us, and they are risking their lives, and some of them get thrown in prison and have to live in horrible beast-like conditions. How judges do it, I don't know, but some of them are not doing very well. Some of them are doing very well. Please, dear God, please, 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 let the police know how much we love them and how we stand behind them. We're not afraid to say we love the police. The police are our friends. The tough guy, starkers in the media who think they're so great and tough for mocking and taunting the police when they would have nothing without the police. Screw them. The police are our friends.
Brilliantly said. I can't think of a better way to end the Saturday night special of The World According to Ben Stein. You're absolutely on fire, absolutely brilliant. And I just want to thank you for being the one that's taught me about so much about having gratitude for our country, having gratitude for so many of these things, making me realize often how blessed I am that my father is still alive.
I am truly blessed.
I am truly blessed. And I'm truly blessed. And I love my dad. And I know how much you loved your dad. And I love on our car rides, there's no greater thing for me than listening to stories about you telling me about your dad, about him listening to Senators games outside on the porch with a beer. And I love that. It's one of the most romantic things. And I sometimes
God bless you. This is where there were transistor radios. He would have a long extension cord, and he'd run it underneath the screen, and run it into the living room, plug it in, and sit there in the dark, smoking a cigarette, and hoping that the smoke from the cigarette would blow away the evil, wicked, horrible, sickening, awful insects, mosquitoes, I think they're called, the worst.
They are. And I don't want to remind everybody, we're on Truth Social. We're building up quite the thing. And we want to invite you to join it with us. So email us at worldaccordingtobenstein@gmail.com. Set up your accounts. If you've been friends and fans of the show, just email me. We will follow you back. We will follow what you're saying. Everybody has got something to say, and we want you get to everybody that listens to us to have that same forum, not just because for whatever. So come join us. Join the ride. BenStein.substack.com. Again,
and we're not going to give up, by the way.
We're never giving up.
I'm an old man. I'm 77 years old. I don't know how much longer I have to live, but I can tell you that the last breath I'm going to be taking is going to say, God bless America. My father, God rest his soul, was dying, had tubes coming in and out of him, and he was getting calls from the Secretary of the Treasury about how to structure the national debt. And with these tubes running in and out of him and blood spattering all over the place, he was answering questions from the Secretary of the Treasury and from President Clinton about how to do it. And I still have those notes with my father's blood on them, because even in his dying moments, his blood was for the United States of America.
God bless people like your father, like my father, like all fathers, and God bless God.
And God bless God.
And we sometimes forget in this country, it's okay to say out loud, we believe in God. God bless America. And I want to thank everybody that's going to be listening to this later on. I want to thank everybody that's been supporting us. We will be back Tuesday night. I want to say prayers for people that are sick out there, that are going through stuff, that are alone. And it's a horrible thing to go to the doctor and find out certain things. And thank God people have families. But for those that don't, I pray for you. Ben prays for you. And we wish everybody that's going through stuff a speedy recovery.
Speedy and complete recovery. And God bless America.
God bless America. God bless you all. Have a great night.